Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Greg Bresnitz. Darren is off this week at a food event in L.A., leaving me here to man the studio alone with these three fine gentlemen in front of me. That was just Wall. They will be in studio. They're really in studio. That is a nice full drum kit right behind you, Paul. But first, Midnights. Well, mid-align nights, Brooklyn. I tried to Google it. It kind of works, kind of doesn't work. Do you want to go around and introduce yourselves and your roles?
Sure. My name's Rafaela Van Kooten. I'm half of the co-owner of Midnights.
But your own person in your own right.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
I'm Marcellus Coleman. I'm a Zeggo chef.
I am Paul Colby. I'm the creative and marketing director and partner with Raph and Devin in the Midnight.
Let's talk about the restaurant first. What is the concept and the idea behind it?
I think that story, as in many things, is a long story.
Okay.
So we'll try to give you the...
It's internet radio, but we only have 22 minutes.
Yeah,
so,
I'll try to give you the Cliff Notes version of it. In its concept, it's kind of everything at its core for the development of my talents, the chef's talents, and my business partner. We all kind of my business partner and I kind of like grew up in the industry together, I guess you can say. I actually gave him his first job when he moved to New York.
What was it?
He was a bartender.
Oh, okay.
I was opening Maysville, actually. Okay. A buddy of mine owned that restaurant.
What was the first cocktail that you felt like you perfected?
The first cocktail? The Manhattan.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It was a good one.
Yeah, it's a good
my
one.
My favorite, so yeah. Good answer. Good.
Me too.
But honestly, I guess you perfect what you want to drink.
Yeah. So, I mean, he kind of like went on his way and went to bars and nightlife, and I kind of stayed, you know, always at the front of the house, operations. You know, I came from the back of the house, but I always loved the front of the house operations. And that's kind of how the name came about, Midnights, M-I-D, and then there's a pipeline, then Nights. The mid part of that represents me, who's always been like kind of the middleman to getting the job done in the front of the house. And the night side of that is Devin. He's always been the bar, cocktail, nightlife kind of guy. So that's where the entire concept came from. But the real true idea of it is just to kind of give the quality and technique and skill level of a chef like Marcellus, and we bring it down literally to the table. Mm. You know, we bring it down to people that come in the restaurant that we want to give them the experience that, you know, you're getting high-end quality food, but you're not paying this like crazy high-end price, and nobody's being pretentious about it. You know, we're in Brooklyn, so, you know, we're all Brooklyn kids, and we want to deliver that to people.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think there was like a time as like the food truck, everyone's like, they're going to like the micro tweezers, and like they were like, I mean, I don't even know how I paid for the meals that I had. And then there's kind of like that swing back where like you still want quality, but it not necessarily like your entire paycheck or more than your entire paycheck is going into it. So, I mean, how do you, you know, approach the food? I mean, knowing that like all the things are options on the plate, like where do you begin to kind of take it down to deliver that type of quality, but at like not insane overtures?
Well, actually, what we do is we buy high-quality ingredients, but we use things like, you know, rainbow trout, which is just a great fish, instead of using something like turbot or halibut, or we use short ribs, or we use mussels. We just take the best ingredients that we can, and we still offer it at a very fair price, but the technique is there. And we also give it the service and everything that we give. You know, it's a whole value. The whole experience is what we try to offer. You know, we don't want to come out there and like rape anybody. I actually don't say that on the radio, but you know, we don't want to rape, but we want to give you the same experience that, like, I'm from 11 Madison Park, W50, but we want to give you the same experience that you have there, but at a level where it's approachable.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you know, it's like it's funny now, like so many restaurants open and it's like per se French Laundry, like, you know, 11 Madison, all of those things. And so that is like a perception of one thing of what you're going to get, but with the food you're actually doing is like all of those things, but not any of those things.
Yeah, it's pretty much still the same ingredients.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, we're just not, I mean, marking it up as they do, to be honest.
Yeah. And then so, like, I mean, given that experience, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you go to the mountain, you learn it, like, you know, you learn for those type of things. What is it, you know, what is it you take from there that, you know, outside of, like, marking it up? But, I mean, there is, like, a level of attention to detail, et cetera. Like, what do you take from those and translate it into, you know, a more approachable
consistency. I mean, we take consistency from there. You know, it's like everything you do there is always consistent and it's on point. And that's what we try to do, the same thing at Midnights. You know, we try to get, I mean, I guarantee that we're giving the same quality and doing the same flavors, if not better, than most restaurants in New York City. But we're doing it at the way we want to do it. We want to make it accessible and make it for everybody. We don't want people to come in and think that they have to be a certain way or have to do a certain thing to eat here. I mean, you'll have the same thing that you'll get there for a third of the price. Mm. Portions are fair. Mm. Service is great. And you get it with a smile.
I mean, it's interesting that, like, I mean, the things that you say are, like, should be base assumptions, right? Fair price, good service, but I mean,
it's not BS. I mean, that's what we really are. Yeah.
No, but I'm saying, I think, like, there's, you know, that, like, the Brooklyn service.
Non-existent.
Yeah. Well, I mean, whatever that might be, but, you know, we've always said on the show that, like, you know, dining is a two-way experience. If you want to be super literal, it's like, I'm working and making money and I'm giving you money and you give me a good product. But, I mean, I think it's, like, it's interesting to think that what you took from the place was consistency and service, which I think, like, some people would say, oh, I learned, like, great knife skills or, like, you know, great seasoning. But it's, like, an interesting to say, like, those are the things that come first aside from everything else.
Yeah, I think that is because those are the things that people see. Mm. You know, like, that's the important thing, like the perception and the vision of the entire atmosphere when you walk in, you know, from the person greeting you at the door till you're sitting down being served. Nobody's seeing your knife skills. That doesn't matter. You know, it can be fantastic or it can be mediocre. What matters at the end of the day is really when somebody comes in, does that all add up, what you're doing in the back of the house, and does it translate to the front of the house? You know, and that's the important part for us, and that's what we constantly want to give. You know, I think, you know, you say the Brooklyn service, and we've all lived in Brooklyn for a long time, and I think we were just sitting in restaurants, and we're just like, this shouldn't be like this. Yeah. You know, where did the hospitality go? Where did the community go? You know, where's the delivery? And you don't have to, you know, I think we spent a lot of time figuring out numbers and facts and all this stuff, but you don't have to, you know, be a millionaire Danny Meyer or Steven Starr to, like, give that level. You know, you can find quality people. You know, we didn't Craigslist anything. Mm. We grew up in this business, so we called on our friends.
Yeah.
We said, look, we're opening a restaurant. Like, come be a part of it, you know? And everybody that works there, they know us, and they know our level of service and the quality that we expect. You know, and they're easy. It's easy translation to deliver it.
I mean, and I know your background, but you two also have, like, two pretty, like, non-traditional backgrounds, right?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in a kitchen. My grandmother owned a catering company, but
oh, what was her specialty?
Man, I grew up in the Caribbean, so, you know, it was like roti and, like, curry and all this stuff. I was a military brat, so I bounced around a lot. But yeah, I mean, I came here when I came to this country. I kind of went off the path in being a football player, and then I had an injury, and then I found my way into the CIA in Hyde Park through this BOCES program that my high school had, and I went to my dad. I'm like, look, I want to be a chef. I think it's a thing I want to do, and he was like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, he was like, you're going to law school.
Yeah.
And I went to law school. The minute I was done, I moved right back to the city, and I became a server and just kind of, like, worked my way up. I mean, my first job was washing dishes, and I think everybody kind of
What was the restaurant?
It was upstate when I was, like, 14. It was a Railroad House Inn or something like that.
Okay.
They had a train that went around the dining room.
Oh, really?
That's kind of hilarious. Always a classy sign.
It was great, like, when it was Christmas, but when it wasn't, it's like, why is this train just going around the dining room?
That's, like, that advice, like, if you write a book about apples, don't put an apple on the cover.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we get it.
Yeah,
train
it.
Theme. No, we got train. Okay, good.
Yeah.
And Paul, what was your background?
I'm a little bit of the oddball in the group. I'd never worked in the restaurant industry before I moved to New York.
I did one of his first jobs too.
Yeah. So, pretty funny story. I was actually in the military, and it took me to Hawaii, and I went to school out there, and I met Raf's ex-girlfriend out there, Carla Rozewski, who is a pretty prominent sommelier now in her own right.
She's making our wine.
And we became really good friends, and she's convincing me to move to New York, and, like, I was a journalism major. I was like, I'm going to go work in magazines, you know, and I moved to New York, and I live on the floor of Carla and Raf's apartment on an air mattress, and I wake up every morning, like, hammock mode, because, you know, it's just deflated, and Raf got me my first job at a restaurant, and from that moment on, I was like, I'm never going to fucking work in a restaurant again. This is the worst fucking job ever, you know? Like, got into magazines, got into, like, fashion and marketing. Come, like, 8 years later, you know, I'm freelancing. I did some traveling. I come back, and I had kind of, you know, I had been working with Raf and Devin on, you know, like, invested with them and trying to, you know, support them in any way I could, and started literally building out the space with them, and the more we explored things about, like, marketing and the, you know, the creative vision of the restaurant, just kind of, like, we all came to a conclusion that I would just come on board full time. I was like, why not? You know, it's like with my friends and my own business and my own neighborhood, and then, you know, met Marcel's through here, and it's like it's kind of meant to be, I guess.
Yeah, kicking and screaming though.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You know, I was like, restaurant now.
Yeah. But now he's a natural fit. I mean, he's kind of
he does
face.
A great job too.
Yeah,
he's on the floor and everything.
Yeah. Oh man, dropping dishes. first time, Raf tells me got to use a tray. I'm like, this is a bad idea. I was like, I've never held a tray. Spilled a drink all over a lady. Shattered.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like the first restaurant job I had. I like lied about my background, and it was like really good until I cleared my first table. Yeah. And they're like, come here. Like, you've never. Yeah. I was like, please don't fire me.
Yeah. 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 I did that too. I lied about. I told this other like restaurant, really prominent restaurant where I grew up, called Chenna, super fancy Italian restaurant. And I walked in there in like a suit, and I was like, yeah, I've worked in restaurants. The guy hired me. I don't know why, but he hired me, and I came in. And I remember the gig was up when they were like, oh, we're going to put truffles on the shirt. So I was like, oh, like the chocolate?
Yeah.
And he was like, what did you just say? And I was like the chocolate. And he was like, no, like the mushroom.
Yeah.
You know, I had no idea. And he knew the gig was up. I don't know why he kept me. But.
Yeah. I mean, because I think like everyone probably has a similar story. Like they're just trying to. Yeah. Like, I mean, the fact that you probably showed up on time and you put a suit on was probably like 10 steps above some of like the people who might have had experience. We're going to take a quick musical break. We're going to talk about playlists in the restaurant, a little bit more about the food, and we will be right back on Snacky Tunes. So I know music is a big part of the vibe there. So what goes into the playlist curation?
A lot of arguing.
No, I know.
Yes, yes.
We all if there's anything that we all bitch about more,
it's music.
It's music. Yeah. But
Paul right here is a great DJ. We'll see that.
That's another one he has under his belt.
I'm a big music fan. Yeah. So, I mean, I just have a large collection ranging from, you know, like African to Indians, everything you hear. Yacht rock.
I mean, I could definitely see it's like fine, put the turbo on the menu. But if you put that song on the playlist, I don't know if I can work here. I just don't think with this partners, you guys just don't understand what I'm saying.
No, it's nothing. Like that, you know, I mean, it's a little bit of trial and error, and it's feeling out the space and the crowd at the time, because sometimes, you know, some things work at, you know, and some other times they don't, you know, and definitely one thing we've kind of learned over the weeks is, you know, how to kind of distinguish ourselves from like the typical things that go on at Williamsburg. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like Saturday night, we decided, you know, we found this great soul DJ, DJ Mojo. He plays like soul and funk and a little bit of like Afro jazz and stuff. And it's just like, it creates this really lively, fun cocktail scene, but where you just like can sit and eat and enjoy yourself and kind of distinguish yourself from, you know, like the usual like Fetty Wap and, you know, you know, like electronic house that is like bouncing off the walls everywhere around town, you know. Not to say there's anything wrong with that. It's just that it's not our thing, you know. It's not the kind of vibe we're trying to create.
And like, I mean, outside of like a DJ, which is like a obvious thing, like when you're going into playlist creation, you know, like what makes it on there and like what do you feel like kind of like matches the food that you're producing?
Fela.
Yeah, okay.
Marcellus does like amazing, you know, people always ask us like what's your cuisine? We say, oh, it's like modern American, but like everything's got like a little global twist on it, you know, and it's like it has like a funky vibe of it's like an Afro jazz meal. good way to put it.
And then, I mean, for like inside of that, I mean, it's like it's midnight. So like when I look at the restaurant, I'm like, it is a late night type of vibe. So like, how does like the menu also like reflect that or like an evening out or like kind of that experience?
Well, basically, you know, we have this really great kick-ass menu that's for dinner, but then we transition right into which I will say is probably the best late night menu.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I mean, it's not being cocky or arrogant
it's a real menu.
But it's like, it's not something, you know, it's not, you know, you go to most restaurants and not to knocking these restaurants. They have sliders.
It's a burger.
Cheese fries, hot dogs.
You know, but this is like, you know, we're like giving you, you know, like we do these, we do these wings. And you're like, wings, what? But no, what we do is we confit them in duck fat, and then we grill them. Mm-hmm. So they get really crispy instead of having to put them in the fryer later.
Yeah.
And so it's not fried. And then we toss it with like a pomegranate glaze, put a little seasoning on it, you know, fried garlic, and then do a, you know, a nice smoked feta yogurt with some pickles.
But I mean, that's the thing from your culinary background where it's like, you know, you could make, I mean, you could just say, okay, here's the burger, here's the wings, here's the fries, everything. Yeah. But it takes all of your knowledge and like drills it down to like what tastes good and what do people like. Now in the modern food age, no one like wants to eat stringy oysters and like a bad burger. Like they'll eat late, but they want the quality.
I mean, we do two burgers, three burgers.
Okay,
three burgers. You know, one's a veggie burger that's actually, and people are like, it's amazing.
Yeah, and that's,
you
know, available.
Like when we thought, you know, when Raph approached me, and I mean, it was just, when we first sat down, you know, and for an interview or whatever, it lasts almost 2 hours, which is unheard of. Mm-hmm. And we talked about food and philosophy, and our thing was like, you know what? We're tired of like what everybody else is doing. We're like, if somebody wants a fucking burger, we'll give them a good burger. Like it shouldn't be an afterthought.
Yeah,
it should be something like we're gonna approach it like per se or approach, you know, their you
the
know
like,
their yeah, we're gonna approach, and that's exactly what we've done. You know, our mussels, our veggie, our lamb burger, and our lamb our Kobe burger, or, you know, our, you know, we just approach it.
Yeah, I think like people have this like idea in their mind about a burger on a menu, and anytime somebody says that, I'm like, well, let's take the Spotted Pig and let's talk about, they have a Michelin star for the last 10 years, and what's the thing that's on there? It's a lamb burger.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like, I think you have execution and skill, and that goes into what you do, and you can make anything taste good. I mean, look, even where we're at Roberta's, it's like the pizza here is phenomenal. Yeah. And you know, there's New York. Like, you can get pizza in every corner, you know, but why do people come to Bushwick?
Yeah.
And it's that atmosphere and that creation. I think what we do at Midnight's is that, because we believe that the food revolution is changing and where it's going. People want to eat smarter. They want to eat healthier. Mm-hmm. They don't want to leave a restaurant feeling gluttoned and like they have a rock in their stomach. And I think you can come and you can actually have three courses at Midnight.
It's very light.
And you feel light.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we want. I think all of us that work there, you know, that put our passion to this, we are all very healthy people, you know, and I think that we want to translate
that. Well, we were when we before
we opened.
I don't know, but I still order the veggie burger every day.
So, I mean, we're getting into that, and we wanted to keep that idea, and, you know, we're in New York, and you can't lie to people anymore. They're going to the farmer's market with you. They're seeing the cost of things, and it's like, you know, when we talk about buying these fresh ingredients, it's like, yeah, we can do that, but now we need to translate it to the people that just bought that around the corner at the farmer's market, you know, and so it's always trying to find that happy balance, that happy medium, but doing what we love, putting it into the food, and then letting it translate itself.
Yeah. What is the secret of building a good veggie burger?
Well, I mean, a lot of people want when they say we're an Asian restaurant. We're not, but we do a lot of ingredients. So what we do with this veggie burger, we use azuki beans. Mm. As well as Japanese brown rice, which we mix with shiitake mushrooms. As well, and we do a little. It's like really no binder. It's just like we puree a little bit, mix a little bit, and then we use quinoa as well. So we call it quinoa, and quinoa three colored quinoa, and it makes like this really nice burger that has like I use a little Ra's al Hanout curry powder. So it has this like really, it's a really nice burger name, and it's all about what the cumin aioli on it, as well as the we do a smoked beet remoulade.
I think the trick is to make it taste like a burger.
This
thing, and it tastes like you're eating a burger, but it's all veggies.
I think I could listen to you talk about how you make your food all day. It's like, oh, it's good. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming on the show. Where can people find you? Where can they come check you out? Marketing guy.
Now we're right off the Bedford stop in Williamsburg, so we're on North 6th, right near Bedford, right behind that New York Muffins, 149. We're hashtag Midnight's Brooklyn.
Old Sakura place.
And you know, you find us at Midnight's BK and Facebook and all that good stuff. Yelp.
MidnightsBK.com.
Oh, yeah. What are the hours? When does the late night menu kick in?
So the late night right now, we're doing Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and it starts at 11.
Oh, perfect.
We open for happy hour at 4:30. We
dollar oysters, and they're good oysters, Virginia oysters.
We do happy hour from 4:30 to 7.
Yeah. And if you're around the corner from Maison, you gotta come correct.
And we do happy hour 4:30 to 7, Monday through Friday. We do dinner 7 nights a week. Sunday we close a little earlier, but Thursday through Saturday up until 4 a.m.
And we have rotating DJs throughout the week.
Awesome.
Check it out online.
Cool.
Music is important there.
Well, thanks for coming by. We're gonna take another quick musical break, and then we'll be back with Wall live in studio here on Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
Kind of phony atmosphere. It's so hard. International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back. Welcome to Snacky Tunes, as you guys get kind of adjusted in here.
Thank you.
Do you want to go around the room and introduce yourselves?
Hi, Vanessa.
Hi.
Vanessa plays drums.
Yeah. That is actually the first time we've ever set drums up that way, and I think you, like, actually... Well, no, it's always been facing out, and you actually just solved our like, sound issue with drums. So now forever we can have full kits in here again.
She's a genius.
Yeah.
You're welcome. My name's Vince. I play guitar.
My name's Sam. I do vocals.
And my name's Elizabeth, and I play bass and sing backup.
Interesting fact, Sam and I have known each other for 11 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Although, did not know you were in this band, but you worked with my brother back in Austin when you were like 15.
It's true. It's a really nice sound.
Yeah, it's a good sound. It's okay. It's internet radio.
I had no idea that it was you who was going to be doing this because I didn't set it up. Vanessa did.
Yeah, I feel like I've run across you like every like 2 to 3 years in like a random setting. And you're always like, I'm saying, I was like, I know who you are. Yeah, I mean...
Well, I never know which one you are.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah,
well,
it's very confusing.
That's absolutely true. So welcome to Snacky Tunes. It's good to have you all here. Let's just kind of start off with, like, the really important question, which you sent over. If my band was a pizza, what toppings would my bandmates be? Because, like, that seems like the best icebreaker that we've never had on the show. So,
ooh, really?
Yeah, so which pizza topping would your bandmates be?
I feel like we should go around and, like, have to say like in a circle.
I think I'm cheese.
No. I think you're pineapple.
Oh, okay.
I think Vanessa should just say who she thinks. Because yeah.
Well, I really don't. I haven't.
You don't think that you don't have a topping for each of us?
I haven't thought it.
You can't even make one up right now.
I think Vince is cheese.
And then what's Sam?
But cheese isn't a top. Just to be clear, cheese is not a topping.
I don't think so.
It kind of is.
I mean, unless like your favorite type of pizza is tomato pie, which is like not a default.
My favorite type of pizza is plain cheese pizza.
Yeah.
That's why I chose cheese.
Yeah. I mean, mine would be pepperoni because that's my favorite.
But
yeah.
I feel like the ingredients should describe you.
So you get cheese, yeah. Vince gets cheese.
Yeah. I'm a little spicy.
Oh, okay.
No, you're not.
My pineapple.
Yeah.
Vanessa, no, are you a pepperoncini then?
Yeah. I would, yeah.
Was this really just a way for you to call your own topping?
She just wants to be a pepperoncini.
Okay.
What am I then?
Sausage.
Sausage? No.
That's true. That's what I was thinking.
Really?
Sam,
I don't know why.
Sam
I feel like
literally
olives.
Just said what I was thinking.
I feel like you're an olive.
So you're all mostly from Texas, right?
We're all from Texas.
All from Texas. Yeah. Did you know each other then, or did you all meet here?
Sam and I did.
Okay.
Yeah, Elizabeth and I were the only people who knew each other moving in New York.
Okay. And then how did you all meet here?
Mutual friends at a show. Actually, the first time I really ever talked to Elizabeth was when she was producing this this film for a friend that actually we just all finally saw for the first time a couple weeks ago and did a show for.
What was the movie?
It's an art film that a friend of mine is making or has been making that recreated a scene from the Def Club, which was this punk club that happened in San Francisco in the late 70s. And so I needed two bands to pretend to be Tuxedo Moon and I can't remember the other one. One of those other like SF era bands. And then we needed a crowd. So we got Future Punks to be one of the bands. And then Vanessa came because she was friends with Future Punks and she was just in the audience. She makes a great cameo as like an insanely drunk person on someone's shoulders throwing beers.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the show's not still up, but it's at the Knockdown Center. And then we played the closing night. The whole thing about it is it's incorporating deaf culture. So they had someone, they had an interpreter like interpreting our lyrics like while we played.
Oh, amazing.
It was pretty amazing. Yeah, it was
really,
like,
really wild experience to have someone else on stage with us. And then also to watch like the audience in attendance that were like part of the deaf community would sign the lyrics back like they were singing along. It was really cool.
That's really amazing.
It was really,
it's very rare that you play a show and then at the end of a song, you hear nothing.
It's silent.
Yeah.
Because they shake their hands instead of clapping.
Wait, so the whole audience was deaf?
Pretty much.
Primarily, like, definitely like 80% of the audience was deaf.
I mean, it's kind of crazy because, like, you know, it's generally only at the biggest events of all time do you see, like,
interpreter,
right? You don't see him at, and those lyrics are, like, pretty straightforward, you know? And they're not that fast. Like, the songs are, like, a bit of a slower tempo, but, you know, playing something like this or something that's a different thing, how do you feel? Like, was the response just, like, could you see them, like, being so appreciative? And
it was cool. People were definitely into it. It was hard, just, like, the way the stage was set up and lights to see when we were playing, but our other friends' bands played, and watching the audience react to them playing made me feel, like, so much more justified in, like, doing what we did, because for us, it, like, it's just different.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of, like... Like Ben said, it's totally silent, and so, but watching them react, like, physically, and, like, signing along, and, like, dancing, and how they react to the hearing community in the room, and if those people are, like, physically reacting, they'll, like, feed off the energy of that. It was super cool.
Yeah, our friends, Future Punks, played, and they play a lot of, you know, four-on-the-floor dance music, and, you know, everybody got up and was dancing along. It was really cool. Quietly dancing along.
Yeah.
Quiet
dancer. Wait, so then how did you guys form as a band?
Well, it's like I met Elizabeth at a show. I've known Sam for a while. Yeah. We all just have a bunch of mutual friends, but I saw Elizabeth at a show. She kind of thought we should jam, see how, like, where it goes, and then came together.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, Elizabeth and Vanessa got together a couple times, and then I remember hearing that they had done that, and me and Vince were sitting at my kitchen table one night, and I was like, Elizabeth and Vanessa are, like, getting together and jamming. I feel like we should just go and see what happens if all four of us are in the room.
And I was in a band back in Austin, so I was in a band for, like, 4 years.
Shout them out.
Finally Punk.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps you've heard of it.
Yeah.
And so then,
I still have good friends from Austin and everything.
Yeah.
So the Transmission guys, well, RIP, but Transmission guys, yeah.
So I was, and then I'd gone to Berlin for 3 years, and there's, like, no band culture there. So then living back in New York, where a place where there's, like, bands again, I was like, oh, maybe I should be in a band again. And so then I heard that Vanessa was practicing, so...
That's awesome. Can we hear a song?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you going to play?
This one is actually, so the very first time we ever got together to see what would happen, just to jam and find out, we wrote this song in the first, like, 20 minutes. So we're going to play that one.
What did you say?
It's a special song.
Okay.
Because we just, it was the one that, like, after 20 minutes of jamming, we were like, oh, we just wrote a song. I guess we can be a band.
Oh, okay.
So this is that.
What's it called?
It's called Last Date. It's a.
It's on,
our
it's
EP.
On the EP, yeah.
Being on the road, I know you kind of run into a lot of things, but you also run into a lot of animals. So what are some of the favorite cats that you've encountered on the road?
Oh, okay. Well, it doesn't have to be on the road, but definitely my favorite cat is Ram Jam.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, Ram Jam, who you're going to see soon.
Yeah, we have a cat who starred in our latest music video that hasn't come out yet, but she's a big part of it.
Oh, yeah?
Couldn't have done it without her. She's a flat-faced Persian.
I don't.
She gets the most air.
You know, the ones with the noses or stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what they call
her
that.
Her face is, like, almost inverted. It's amazing to look at.
Is flat-faced person, like, the actual name, or do you just, like, I think that's what they should be called?
That's what I called it. Okay. I mean, she's definitely a Persian. I don't know what they call them when they have the flat faces.
Oh. Yeah, I don't
know.
I don't know.
Stage name? Her casual name is Ram Jam.
I mean, did you run into Ram Jam, or was, like, did you do a cat casting call?
She is the guys who put out our EP. She's one of their cats. This guy Tripp. So
okay.
she was a shoo-in from the beginning.
Oh, okay.
She had it on lock.
Yeah, they're our label. But
Warp Cat Records.
Based out of Greenpoint.
His Instagram is fully devoted to her. If anybody wants to check it out.
Oh, I mean, you got to get your like pet Instagram game on. There's like some lucrative.
There's a hashtag Ram Jam, so everybody can check that out.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, they're just piggybacking off of your hard work just to launch Ram Jam. I would definitely be very suspicious.
We're taking
of
a percentage.
Yeah, of course. <That'd be> early points on
all the cat food ads.
So you mentioned, like, obviously no band culture in Berlin, but where you're from in Austin is, like, such a great music scene. Do you have connections to any bands back there? Is there, like, a little bit of New York-Austin love, or is your running crew mostly New York?
I've been gone for so long. Sam maybe still does.
Yeah, I mean, I still have friends who make music there. I've been in New York for, like, 5.5 years now. But definitely I don't feel associated with that music culture, like, because I wasn't doing music when I was there. So, like, my music culture is here. We have an amazing community in New York of bands and incredibly talented musicians that we run with all the time. And we're almost never playing a show unless we know someone else is doing it, which I feels really special.
And a lot of them have Texas connections, like, you know, like, are from other towns in Texas and stuff like that.
Only Elizabeth and I are from Austin. Vanessa and Vince grew up in other parts of Texas.
And then all the bands I was playing with in Austin are, you know, defunct now, because that was, like, 10 years ago.
Yeah, I'm from Beaumont, and there's actually there's been a live music scene there for a long time, and a really cool punk scene. A lot of great bands. This band called The Put Downs was a big fan of. Austin Brown from Parquet Courts, he's from Beaumont as well.
Actually, how Vince and I met.
Yeah. Well, whenever I first moved to New York, I was staying with Austin.
Is there a current scene in Beaumont, though? Like, is there a current band in Beaumont?
I mean, it's an ongoing scene. There's, like, tons of bands that continue to play. I don't think it's as punk as it used to be. Like, it's sort of indies sort of become the takeover genre. And then there's a lot of bluegrass and folk there. There's a band called Purple from Beaumont who are doing really well.
It's a good band name.
Yeah.
And then Ringo Death Star, two of the members are from Beaumont as well, which I helped Elliot formed that band, like, many years ago before they found their
Alex, lineup. Who plays bass, and Ringo Dessar is probably my main music connection left in Austin, Texas. They've all lived in Austin for a long time now, and they tour and stuff, so I get to see her more frequently than I do with other people who are making music.
I mean, most of our musician friends here in New York are all from Texas. It's kind of crazy how many prominent bands in New York are where the musicians are from Texas. It's kind of funny.
We didn't meet them until they moved here, which makes it even more weird.
I mean, Austin, I think, out of almost, or in Texas as well, like, such a music tied to that state. I feel like here, there's music, but just, like, one aspect of it. Obviously, there's other parts of Texas, but I feel like music has always been so deeply associated with that state.
Especially in Denton, that's where I know most of the music crew up here. I went to college with them, and that was such a great community for music. I don't know what it's like so much now, but
I mean, Denton, like Midlake and all those bands that came out of there. Yeah, that was like one of my first introductions. It was Austin, but Denton was like the other Texas town that
where,
I knew.
Where are you from? Like, where'd you go to high school?
Lower Merion High School.
Kobe, do what?
Where Kobe played.
Wait, where?
Lower Merion High School.
Lower Manhattan High School?
Lower Merion.
Where is that?
But in Philadelphia.
Oh, you're from Philadelphia. Yeah. Oh, you're so not from Texas.
No, but I spent a lot of time there. Like I said, my brother went there a long time ago and got to know a lot of, like, that was, like, kind of our second home after.
So you didn't live there as long as your brother did?
Mm-mm.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. But just know
I know your
people.
Brother, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How do you know my brother?
From living in Austin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Wait.
I'm from Austin.
Wait, you're the friend?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We met a long time. I don't know, but I get it. But
I came to your DJ night in, like, 2006 or something, after my old band played, like, CMJ or something.
Which band?
Yeah, when we were all visiting
Finally
New York.
Punk.
Oh, okay.
And I was here with...
Oh, yeah, Sam came, too.
In New York.
Yeah, we played Bowery Ballroom.
And then we were all there.
Oh, okay. Can we hear another song?
Yeah.
We're just going to go...
Now that we've resurrected that ghost.
We're going to just go down memory lane.
Yeah, great.
For the rest of this thing. We're just going to bring in friends that you've met. It's like, you might remember this person.
You might remember it. might remember.
This was your life.
Yeah, this was your life.
Let's do milk next.
Vanessa, you mentioned that some of your favorite songs are about food.
The first two that I think of are both about sandwiches, and I really love to talk about Finally Punk again, okay. This song that Elizabeth wrote about making a sandwich and, like, telling a boy, like, no, you can't have any. I think it's hilarious.
That was the first song Finally Punk ever wrote.
It's genius.
It's
I love
called
it.
Jazz Hit.
Yeah. It makes no sense. And then my other favorite one about a sandwich is by Mika Miko and that turkey sandwich, I think it's just called.
Yeah.
So good. I don't know.
What is it about the songs that that grab you?
You know, it's not really the lyrical content. I don't know why. It just, like, grabs me, and then I'm like, oh, it's funny. It's about a sandwich.
Does it make you, like, want to have a sandwich afterwards, or irrelevant?
Totally irrelevant. Just a coincidence.
So I know you guys have the video coming out with Ram Jam, and it's going to, like, break the internet wide open. What else are you guys working on?
We're probably going to go on tour in the fall. We're still working that out. And then we're working on a LP, ideally for release next year.
And we're also doing Northside in June.
More recently.
Yeah, and in the near future.
In like two weeks,
we're going to play Northside, which should be pretty fun. I'm just looking to use my wristband and every possible connection I have to see Brian Wilson play Pet Sounds.
I mean,
I'm already, like, asking everybody I know, can I go?
I think you can. What's crazy is that I told my friend about it, like, 2 weeks ago, and there were still tickets to see him, which is crazy.
That's
to me.
Crazy.
It's crazy to me that, like, that did not sell out immediately.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. We had a bunch of friends down at Levitation that got canceled.
Which is like such a bummer.
Which is a big deal because Brian Wilson was going to play all of Pet Sounds. And I almost went just to go see that. And then I found out that he was doing Northside. And I was like, great. We're also playing Northside.
I also went down, almost like booked a flight just to go see it. But
yeah.
I think he's playing. I think this is just the beginning of that. Or I hope it is.
Yeah. And that's in 2 weeks. So we're going to play. We have a couple of fun Northside showcases. One with Warpcat Records and one with Post Trash. Over that weekend. It should be pretty fun. And then trying to see Brian Wilson.
And they were playing on June 1st. That's the most recent time. We're playing at Shea Stadium?
Yeah.
On June 1st.
We've been on a pretty intense mega tour of New York City in the last couple months. We've played like 12 shows in the last 8 weeks. We played four shows in the first week of May. Everything from Webster Hall to Silent Barn. So we're on a...
Oh.
Yeah.
We're boom.
On a, I can yeah. Pretty tired.
We're on a... We've been on a pretty mega...
Yeah, but I mean, that's great. I mean, just especially like for early days, like why wouldn't you?
Yeah, now we know what every venue is like, because otherwise you have venues writing you and you're like, well, I don't know, I've never seen it. Have you? Well, you know, so now we've played all of them.
What's your top two?
I don't know. We really like Rough Trade. I feel like every time we're going to play there, we're excited, right?
A venue is nice. There's like such a spectrum, you know, like playing Aviv is obviously extremely different than playing Webster Hall. Like. Yeah. I like Aviv, and it's like a truce, like, can I curse? I don't know.
Aviv, we just played, like, one of the best shows we've ever played, so that definitely colors how you feel about the location.
I just think that it's, like, there's so few true, like, shithole venues left, and Aviv is just, like, actually a shitty warehouse, and people live there, and it's a mess.
Inside.
And you can smoke inside. It's just, like, it's a disaster. But like,
how's the sound system?
You know,
amazing.
It sounded much better than we thought it was going to.
You know, I like to measure venues by how good their sound system is or sound engineer. You know, I really don't care about if the audience likes it or not. It's like, how good does it sound?
Yeah.
You know? But Aviv, like, I mean, you walk in there and you're like, oh, man, this is going to be a nightmare. Look at these stacks. This sucks, man. But, like, the guy, the engineer, I forgot his name. Was
Griffin.
Griffin, yeah, yeah. He was like, all right, what do you need? You know, he came in and the audience was like, yeah, feel free to turn up as loud as you want. We're like, oh.
So okay. Who knows if it's like Aviv or it's Griffin or, you know, or just like a weird magic that happened that
or
night.
It usually is like both halves of the whole, you
exactly.
know,
yeah,
it's like
totally.
If it was someone else or another system, but there's like some places where like, you know, if you turn like your amp, just like, they're like, just turn it just this way, just a little bit. That's the magic as opposed to like that. And like, that's where the engineer really knows how to like play the room as well as the band does.
Yeah.
But I know like at Rough Trade, like the first show we ever played there was insane, like so good. And we've never had that engineer again. And like, we kind of, or at least I like kind of miss him, you know, I'm like, oh, I wish he would come back and like make it sound like that again, you know?
Yeah. Sound engineers of the world, if you're listening, we love you.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are definitely the make or break. And they definitely have like, you know, if like, you know, warning to the band that overlooks the sound engineer or like treats them just like like this.
No, we've definitely experienced the full gamut within our full range of venues, full range of engineers, and how even if you're playing a warehouse that's split in half horizontally like Aviv, it can still sound good. Or you can play Rough Trade with someone who doesn't know what they're doing and then you're in a big room and it doesn't sound good at all.
Fair enough. I want to make sure we get time for one more song, but where can people find you, find your music, watch your cat videos, check you out on tour?
Our website is wearewall.com, and it has links to everything that you need on it, basically.
But all our social media is also wearewall. So, like, Instagram, Facebook, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Blah, blah, that's the place. It'll have links to, like, wherever the video gets released, and all of our shows are on our website. And
yeah, we have a music video up already on YouTube that was... put out by Super Deluxe and shot by Richard Kern, so pretty cool.
Vince is really excited to tell people he's been shot by Kern.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
oh yeah.
He's finally a Kern girl.
He put it on his modeling resume.
Well, we want to quick shout out. Thanks to Midnight's guys to coming by, and thanks for Dave, our own engineer, for making this sound so good.
Dave.
Thanks,
the,
Dave.
The unsung but sometimes sung hero. Hello to the world. Well, thanks for coming on. This was pretty great. Sam, good to see you.
Thanks
guys.
For having me.
Yeah,
nice to see you too. It's crazy.
Yeah.
11 years later.
What's the name of the song you're going to take us out with?
Circus.
Okay. We will be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.